Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, April 1st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Spring is a big time for social events, which can often be expensive outings. We'll discuss ways to keep things under control in our next segment. But right now, tariff turmoil is building as Wall Street manufacturers and trade partners brace for the impact. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at AndrewBush.com, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Andy, thank you for joining us today. And one thing I noticed on Bloomberg Television this morning is that they have a countdown timer on their as part of their television presentation, counting down the days, the hours, and the minutes until the Trump tariff announcement, which is now scheduled for 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, conveniently after the markets have closed. And that still leaves on the table the possibility that all of this stuff could be pulled back at the last second, because voila, we've reached a deal with numerous trading partners.
Yeah, I don't think on this one it will be, because it's broad based. This is on roughly 20% tariff on most imports. So that's what we're hearing on a leak from The Washington Post. It's hard to say what will come out right now. I think we already have 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum, 25% tariffs on autos coming in. We have 20% tariffs on China. We have these potential 20% tariffs on all imports coming into the United States. This is a president is trying to redo the global trade structure that started way back after the 1930s, when we had Smoot-Hawley. And it was because of Smoot-Hawley that we developed GATT and then eventually the WTO. And the president is trying to address some of the mismatches and some of the problems that have been creeping into those agreements ever since they, you know, ever since really China ascended to the WTO. So, but most economists are slashing their forecasts for economic growth for 2025. Goldman just did. Moody's is coming out and saying they're expecting potential recession risks going up to 35%, all because of the uncertainty that's being generated by what's going to happen tomorrow.
And what is the end game here, Andy? I mean, I think there's been so much rhetoric around what this means and what is going to happen. But does the Trump administration believe that the tariffs will be a source of revenue that could offset potential that could pay for tax cuts in the future? Or do they believe that this is going to bring about reshoring of jobs that were moved overseas a long time ago?
Well, if you listen to Peter Navarro, he gives us an Orwellian take on this. He thinks that the tariffs will raise $600 billion a year, or $6 trillion over 10 years. And he says that's actually a tax cut, which is, on the face of it, absurd, because most of these will get passed on consumers, right? So that's the problem with this thing. Do they need it for the tax cuts in Congress? Yes, they do. And that's what they're trying to figure out right now. But again, you know, most of us thought coming into this that President Trump would use this as a lever to get better deals. But that's not the case anymore. It's pretty clear that he wants to put these on. He wants to reorder global trade. He wants to bring manufacturing back to the United States. He believes those are high paying jobs. He wants to redo trade between countries in the United States, especially countries that have trade surpluses. But obviously, these countries are not going to stand alone. I mean, who would have thought China, South Korea and Japan would stand up together against the United States and say, if the U.S. goes through with this, we're going to put the same amount of tariffs on. So it's creating all sorts of chaos within the business community and also within geopolitics.
Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Coming up, making sure spring celebrations don't break the budget.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Spring is bursting with celebrations and costs, from showers to weddings to graduations. Joining us to discuss how to financially survive it all is Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And spring spending is above and beyond, you know, making sure you have that aluminum tub full of Italian beef for some sort of, you know, communion or confirmation party. Spring break vacations, I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's certainly the case in my corner of the world, have just gotten more elaborate and more expensive. Because, you know, when I was a kid, spring break was you went to the zoo, and now you have families that are going to other countries. They're going on these amazing resort trips, and that isn't cheap. And I think the desire to keep up with them could also create some financial hazards for you.
Oh, definitely. And it is, you know, I call it spring spending, because it's not just the spring trips, but all these celebrations start: graduations, weddings, showers, reunions. So, you know, as I mentioned over and over again, Rob, in the very beginning of the year, you know what vacations you're going to do in the spring. And most of these events you should know about. You get saved the dates for weddings. You know about graduations. So you should budget all this ahead of time. That's the first thing.
And what is a good, you know, what does Emily Post say about, you know, setting a budget for gifts, not only for a wedding, if you're invited to a wedding, but for graduations, but or maybe religious observances, or just the kind of things that are celebrated in May and June?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have exact figures because every community is different, but I think you can get the lay of the land when you talk to some friends. But, you know, maybe be creative on some of these gifts. If it's a newlywed couple, you want to get them, they just got married, maybe you give them a gift, but you invite them over for a gourmet dinner during their first year of marriage, or you help them with something else, or you make something. It doesn't all have to be a financial gift. You could be creative, and sometimes those creative gifts are the best and also have a lot of memories attached to them.
And in some cases, especially with a wedding, the monetary gift that you give the bride and groom or the happy couple, that may be the cheapest part of the wedding experience.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to pay for a suit, you have to pay for a dress, you have to pay for travel, you got to pay for the hotel. And yeah, it's a great time at the end of the day, but the bills are there and they're waiting for you when you get home.
And there's a lot of things you can do. So let's kind of break this down. First of all, on the clothing, you may have something in your closet already, and maybe a new group, so you don't need to get a new dress. But I know a lot of people use Rent the Runway or some of those mail order where you rent a dress. You know, you can rent a designer dress for a few hundred dollars. Maybe switch with friends. I did that when I was going through all that stage with weddings. In fact, my cousins and I used to mail dresses, you know, across the country because we wore them in different events. When it comes time for travel, you know, again, you'll know these dates probably a year, at least 6 months. Book early. Book your flights. Book your accommodations. You know, maybe there's a cheaper, they always give you the hotel where the venue is or where you can stay, but sometimes there's cheaper options. If you're going with a group, you know, you can maybe rent a condo for cheaper than a hotel. So those are things to really watch your budget. And, you know, as far as the gifts, like I said before, maybe do some creative things, do some artistic gifts, as well as a monetary gift. So there are ways to save some money if you do a little planning ahead of time.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life, a good rule of thumb as you look at all of your spring travel or weddings or celebrations. She says, set a budget, and very similar to the way that you would set a budget for the holidays, so you can keep an eye on that spending and enjoy those celebrations at the same time. Coming up, a look at the value of allowances for kids.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Kids and their allowances have long been a topic of family discussion. Some parents don't give one at all, while others tie it to chores, grades, or both. We welcome in Shane Gornick, partner and certified financial planner of Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Find him online, preparemyretirement.com. Shane, thank you for joining us today. And you and I both have daughters who are going into what we would call the allowance range. It's no longer enough just to have a point system for chores and things like that, and maybe there's a trip to Starbucks at the end of the month. They want cold hard cash, Shane. And the question is, do we give kids cold hard cash anymore, or do we reload a debit card that mom and dad has control over?
Great question, and Rob, I think it's a great idea. You know, in school, you learn about parallelograms and square dancing, stuff that we all use on a daily basis. But you're never really taught about money saving and budgeting. So unfortunately, many people have to learn those lessons the hard way, which ends up being expensive. And so we're a big fan of getting your kids comfortable with money at a younger age so that they can learn those lessons early on and so that you have influence and control. So we are, and I'm a big believer in using cash, just to get them kind of comfortable with how cash and getting change and that kind of stuff works. But there are also, several, resources out there where you can open up a bank account. I think Chase and Capital One, allow you to open up an account for your kid where you can actually create notifications or alerts, if they, spend more than a certain amount of money or if certain types of transactions occur.
And then it also sets up a very good conversation about what your time is worth, because if you are paid for providing a good or service, it sets you up for understanding that's the value of work as opposed to just hoping to get a handout from the bank of mom and dad.
Exactly. I'm a big fan of learning, you know, that your time is actually worth something. And it's also important while they're learning that lesson that as parents, we have the opportunity to kind of work with them on those expenditures and also hold them accountable. So if we see that there's a $200 transaction at Sephora, we can confront them about that and know about it right away, and that can help guide their spending and decision making with money moving forward.
And on top of that, it's more than just setting a budget and also learning about what your time is worth. You can talk about setting a budget, you can talk about sensible spending, but more importantly, you can talk about saving as well, and the things that you could do if you save the money and also allow it to grow.
Exactly. And that's why we're big fans of parents not buying everything or paying for everything for our kids. If there's something in particular that your child wants that might have a little bit of a higher dollar value, we encourage you to go ahead and let them save for it or save for part of it. And that can kind of keep a number in the back of their mind of what a goal is that they want to attain, so that if they're looking to spend money on other things, like you mentioned, Starbucks, for example, or other things, then that's money that's not being used to save for that end purpose. And the idea of sacrificing something that provides short-term satisfaction to get more of a bigger long-term benefit is definitely something we want to instill at an early age.
Now, lastly, I just want to stick up for square dancing as part of a well-rounded educational curriculum, because I can grand right and left like nobody's business, Shane, and I've been holding on to those lessons for 30 years.
Keep on do-si-don, Rob.
Shane Gornick, partner and certified financial planner, Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Mayor Johnson weighs in a tentative contract for Chicago Public Schools teachers. Several suburban communities are electing mayors today, including in politically charged Dalton. It's Travel Tuesday, the advantages of avoiding peak season for your next trip. General Motors reports a solid rise in first quarter sales, but that's not the case at Ford. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed right now. The Dow is down 115 points. The NASDAQ is up 99. The S&P 500 is up 5.25. We have 40 degrees right now at 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. The Chicago Teachers Union and the school board have approved a tentative contract. Mayor Johnson says the proposed agreement will offer every student a well-rounded education, but also protect veteran teachers.
Look, this contract is a reflection of my overall values, as well as what the people of Chicago expect.
The proposed contract provides union members with 4% raises in the first year, then up to 5% in the next three. Several suburban communities are voting for new mayors today. In Aurora, incumbent mayor Richard Irvin is running for a third term. He's taking on Alderman John Leish. Supermayor, the quote-unquote supermayor, Tiffany Henyard, is on her way out in south suburban Dalton. She failed to advance out of the primary, so voters in that south suburb will pick between trustee Jason House and Cassandra Hobson Jordan. In Park Ridge, the race for mayor there features incumbent Marty Maloney running against challenger Sal Responti. And up in Wisconsin, there's lots of attention on the state Supreme Court, where there is an open seat that'll help decide the court's ideological makeup. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. The markets are mixed right now. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And for another 24 hours and change, Jeff will be watching and waiting with bated breath just to see the full scope of this tariff announcement that'll come from the White House after the markets close tomorrow afternoon.
Well, that's right, Rob. And we're looking for the Rose Garden conversation from President Trump to better understand what these tariffs are going to look like. I think there's three options, Rob. We are going to see a blanket 20% potential reciprocal tariff, or you could see more of a tiered type of tariff, or you could see a case-by-case or country-by-country specific tariff. Regardless to say, I think these tariffs have really affected the mentality. You've seen sentiment sour. You had a very dismal Q1 end yesterday. We probed the lows in the S&P 500, made a new low yesterday, and now we're 2.5% higher. So I believe the market participants have gotten too pessimistic about this. I think this is more of a negotiating tool, and I'm actually getting prepared for April to be a little bit of a rip-roaring rally as we've gotten too far, too fast on the negative sentiments.
Now, yesterday, it seemed like there was a flight to perhaps dividend plays, which is why the Dow managed to end the day in positive territory, just as a way of seeking shelter in uncertain times. How do you explain what happened, what's going on right now?
Well, now you're talking my wheelhouse, Rob. You know, I am the portfolio manager of the Essential 40 Stock ETF, ticker ESN, Echo Sam Nancy, for those writing it down. And what do we do in the Essential 40? It's exactly what you're talking about. This rotation out of technology into blue chip names, that has been the theme. We saw fits and starts of it in 2024, but we really saw in the first quarter this rotation out of the Mag 7. All these big names that we continue to see provide gains from technology and the AI theme, that rotation into these essential names, these blue chip boring names, have really gone well. And you talk about a CVS, you talk about American Waterworks, you talk about Home Depot. Some of these names that, you know, you don't think about or talk about, but those are names you want to own when you do see a little bit of panic in the marketplace.
Everybody has an opinion on Donald Trump, but one thing that is indisputable is that he has been very good over the course of four decades plus in selling the sizzle of whatever it is he's trying to promote. And the tariffs are certainly another example of that. I mean, I mentioned this earlier in the show. Bloomberg has a countdown timer now until the tariff announcement tomorrow. So it is certainly top of mind. But in terms of, you know, what once the tariffs are implemented, everybody has an idea, or they'd like to think they have an idea of what the world is going to look like afterwards, and whether how this is going to change the economy or the government's coffers. But in your mind, what does the world look like after that? How does the economy evolve to meet this new tariff regime?
I don't think it changes a lot, and I can't believe I'm leaning on Fed Chairman Powell's word transitory, but he talked about the tariffs being transitory, not going to be here for long. It's definitely going to help us potentially bring down our deficit and strengthen the U.S. economy, but I don't get political, Rob. What I really like to focus on, what does it mean, to your point, after the fact? And I think President Trump historically has always been a great negotiator. And if you love him or hate him, that's not the point. He's trying to renegotiate, re-level the playing field. Is he doing too much potentially all at once? Maybe. But at the end of the day, I think the market will have a bit of a breath of fresh air once we realize succinctly what these tariffs look like. And I think the marketing component of it is just part of the enthusiasm he's going to bring. And that's where I get a little more optimistic. And I'm not a contrarian by nature, Rob, but so many people have gotten so negative. I think politics have kind of influenced some of the investment decisions. And that's where there's opportunity. And that's why all these moves are being amplified.
Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, what shoulder season is and why you should take advantage of it.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. We're heading into so-called shoulder season, an opportunity to travel with fewer crowds, lower prices, and great weather. Joining us with the inside scoop is Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online, travelbta.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. And just as there's a great deal of diversity all over the world, there are different shoulder seasons depending on the destination. What may be shoulder season in Europe is not necessarily shoulder season in the Caribbean.
That's correct. And a lot of that is contingent upon, obviously, when is the season. So for hurricane season in the Caribbean, that's neither peak season nor is it shoulder season. So it does vary depending on the destination.
Now, when you travel in during the shoulder season, and let's talk about going to Europe, which is starting right now. It runs April through early June, and then again, September to mid-October. The crowds are lower and the prices are lower, but what kind of a discount are we talking about here?
It can be a high discount for particular types of hotels, for example. If you're looking for family style rooms, right? During peak season, those are going to go at high demand because they sell out. So you're going to see bigger savings, sometimes as much as 50% on very, very specific types of room categories and locations will drive the value of a property as well.
And then shoulder season also exists in the United States as well, especially when it comes to national parks. And again, shoulder season is just beginning in for the national parks, April and May and September, October. And once again, for those cooler temperatures and fewer visitors compared to the summer peak. And Angie, when it comes to certain national parks, you're not joking. I was out in California last year and somebody was recommending going out to Yosemite for a future vacation, but you have to make Yosemite reservations almost a year in advance because so many people want to go there. So if you can find a time where it's nowhere near as crowded, you know, jump on that.
That's correct. And you're right. Spring break, for example, for family travelers, you're going to save a lot of money if you take that national park experience where, yes, it might be cooler temperature, but when you take it during spring break, you typically pay less than if that's during the peak season of summer. And then for those that can travel with less restriction due to school schedules and the school year, I would even consider kind of bumping that up and chancing traveling in March or in later October, just so you can really avoid, you know, the combination of while it's not peak season, spring breakers and families oftentimes, you know, have more travelers and the prices will even go up a little bit during the shoulder season. Shoulder season for Europe, for example, is more like March this year. And the reason being is that we have a lot of popular things in Europe going on right now, including the Jubilee in Italy. So, and Easter being later had really shifted peak season to be sooner versus later with everyone traveling in April for the Easter holiday.
And then very quickly, are there any airfare hacks that you could recommend for getting the most bang for your buck during shoulder season? Because there are some times I have thought, well, maybe I'll take my own advice for Travel Tuesday and see if there is a deal to be had on some European destination. And once again, I spend 20 minutes on the airline app and my jaw is still on the floor about where some airfares are these days, especially between Chicago and Europe.
Right. One thing that people oftentimes overlook is multi-way tickets. So they assume that a round trip Rome is going to be more affordable. That's not always the case. So being able to look at different destinations, which in my opinion makes more sense because you don't want to have to return to Rome after you've already been there on the front end of a trip. So tweak your destinations a little bit. What's it going to cost me if I fly into Milan and end my trip in Rome versus reversing that order? Or maybe you look at the opportunity to even fly into London, take a cheap flight from London to Rome, and then flying out of Rome. That actually might save you money. It all kind of depends. I would also look at, you know, making sure that you evaluate economic situations and political situations, because knowing, you know, a lot is happening right now. I've seen since January flights really go down. So that ability to plan a last minute trip at a lower price, even for summer, has become a little bit more realistic from the standpoint of airfare has dropped.
Angie Rice, co-founder, Boutique Travel Advisors in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online, travelbta.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, how threatened tariffs may be helping auto sales.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
General Motors posting strong first quarter U.S. vehicle sales while Ford slip. This comes as the industry braces for new tariffs. Joining us with the latest is John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. John, thank you for joining us today. And the most immediate impact the tariff announcements on the auto industry has had on car dealers is that a lot of people are probably trying to buy them ahead of time. And that we have reports from dealerships where there's not much in the way of incentives or enticements, because there's a line of people out the door who want to buy a car before the new tariffs kick in.
Well, you've got that right. It was a pretty strong month for automakers. Like you said, I mean, General Motors had a terrific month. Their sales were up nearly 17%. Hyundai Kia was up almost 10%. Mazda was up 10%. Subaru, 9%. But you pointed out, Ford sales slipped. They were down a little over 1%. Toyota was kind of flat. Its sales were up less than 1%. And not all the automakers have reported yet. But it's, you know, starting to look like a pretty strong month overall.
Now, what's going to happen once those tariffs kick in, and how can the auto industry respond, especially if those tariffs are actually implemented and they stay there and are not used as a negotiating tool?
Well, Rob, right now we're not going to see the impact for, I think, a couple of months. Number one, automakers have been stacking up inventory in anticipation of this. So have automotive suppliers. So have dealers. So it'll probably take several months to work through that inventory before we really start to see the impact of the tariffs. But sometime this summer, I don't think there's any two ways around it. Car prices are going to go up, both used and new.
Now, if you spend 5 minutes on social media and you see comments about stories about tariffs being imposed on the auto industry and on car parts and on imported parts and things like that, well, the response is, well, why can't we just make this stuff in America? But, John, it takes months, if not years, to make CapEx decisions like building a new factory. And there's no guarantee that the tariffs will remain in place within a year or two or three.
Well, number one, you're absolutely right. I mean, the tariffs, though, I think will probably be around for quite some time. I think even if we get a new administration, let's say the Democrats win in, you know, 3 years' time, I don't think they're going to pull these tariffs off. The unions love these tariffs. And so I think once they're in place, they're going to stay in place. But like I've said before, I think, you know, a lot of people believe we should just make all this in the U.S. Well, we can make more of it. We can't make all of it. We just don't have the capacity to make all of it. And so I think net, you know, with car prices going up, I think sales will go down. Yeah, we'll get some more production in the U.S. But when all the dust settles, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of change in terms of how many cars are made in the U.S.
John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit, thank you for joining us today.